Good evening. This is the KRFP Evening Report for Monday, December 9th, 2013. I'm Lee Robartis in the news tonight. Friends of the Palouse Ranger District question the process for the collaborative Boxall land exchange proposed by Idaho's congressional delegation. Four 120-car Bakken crude oil trains may be coming through Spokane each day if all the crude oil terminals are built on the west coast of Washington. Post Falls resident sues the city for illegal search, and farmers market need survey data results presented at a city council committee meeting today. We'll have details on those stories and more coming up on the KRFP Evening Report. And live in the KRFP studios in Moscow, Idaho, I'm Lee Robartis, and this is the KRFP Evening Report. A Post Falls resident has sued the city of Post Falls. Police Chief Scott Haug and several police officers in U.S. District Court in Coeur d'Alene over a warrantless search of her home that was later ruled illegal by a judge. Melissa Miller said police used excessive force and says she was physically injured, lost wages, and suffered emotional pain because of the search. The lawsuit says city police entered Miller's home December 10th, 2011, searching for a runaway juvenile. Other family members and friends at the home at the time told officers the juvenile had been at the home earlier but had left and provided a description of the clothes the juvenile was wearing. Miller said she objected to the search of her home and was handcuffed by police and told she was resisting. Miller and her partner were charged with marijuana possession after police searched a room rented by a tenant and found the drug, but a judge threw out the charges because of the illegal search. The city and the police department have not filed a response to the lawsuit, which was filed last week and did not return phone calls from the Associated Press. The Troy School District canceled classes today because of frozen pipes at both the school buildings. Frozen water pipes also prompted the closing of Adams Elementary School in Spokane today. Moscow fire crews responded to a fire in a basement apartment of a triplex in the 600 block of Harrison Street this morning that they believe was caused by a candle. Police Chief Ed Button said a man who lived at the apartment told fire crews he left a candle burning in his apartment when he went outside. Button said there was significant damage to the apartment and there were no injuries. Judge James F. Judd has denied a motion for a new trial for twice-convicted murderer Mark Lankford. Judd said Lankford did not show there was new evidence that would change the result of his second conviction for the 1983 murders of Robert Brevance and his wife Cheryl of El Paso, Texas. Lankford and his brother Brian were convicted of killing the couple as they camped in Idaho County. Idaho farm export statistics for the first 9 months of the year indicate the state is on pace for a third record year in a row. Idaho exported $736 million worth of agricultural products to foreign countries between January and the end of September, which is up 7.6% over the same period in 2012. Exports to Canada rose 6.9% to $153 million, and exports to Mexico rose 8.5% to $124 million during the 2 9-month periods. Export to China rose 5% to $74 million, and ag exports to South Korea rose 31% to $47 million. 31% of the farm exports were dairy products. Friends of the Palouse Ranger District co-founder Marilyn Beckett says her group is concerned that the Forest Service won't hold public hearings before the agency, government stakeholders, and Western Pacific Timber all negotiate the long-proposed Upper Locksaw land exchange. U.S. Senator Jim Risch and other members of Idaho's congressional delegation earlier this year announced a collaborative process reviving the Locksaw land exchange proposal involving stakeholders. The stakeholders are identified as the Nez Perce Clearwater National Forest, landowner Western Pacific Timber, the Nez Perce Tribe, and Idaho County. Beckett told the Lewiston Tribune, "I don't see what harm would be done by having public hearings previous to them trying to draft a bill. It seems like they could get a lot of good suggestions and get a real good sense of the public temperature on this thing. It may not be pretty, but oh well, that is what the process is supposed to do." As originally proposed, the Upper Lauksaw Land Exchange would have traded more than 20,000 acres of Western Pacific timberland along the Bitterroot Divide for Forest Service land in the Palouse Ranger District and other parts of northern Idaho. The Forest Service wants to consolidate the land in the checkerboard pattern along the Bitterroot Divide near the Montana state line to help with habitat restoration. Another version of the Upper Lauksaw Land Exchange, only involving Forest Service land within Idaho County, has been strongly opposed by Idaho County residents. Washington transportation officials will be holding a public meeting Wednesday in Spokane Valley on a plan to increase the number of crude oil trains passing through the Spokane area from 1 to 4 per day. The increase in the number of 120-car trains is expected if all 7 oil shipping terminals and refineries in western Washington begin receiving shipments of Bakken crude from North Dakota. The largest capacity terminal is planned in Vancouver, Washington. It would be owned by Tesoro Savage. That terminal will be capable of handling 360,000 barrels of crude per day. Currently, 3 smaller terminals on the coast are shipping or refining Bakken crude. If the 7 new terminals are built, the region's capacity would be 785,000 barrels per day. Spokane Riverkeeper and other environmental groups, plus Spokane City Council members John Snyder, Ben Stuckart, and Amber Waldreff, have raised concerns, prompting the meeting scheduled for Wednesday. Bart Mihailovich of Spokane Riverkeeper told the Spokesman Review, "The oil train increase plan comes at a time when people in the region are trying to deal with a separate proposal to increase the number of coal trains through the area from the Powder River coal fields of eastern Montana and northern Wyoming." Mihailovich said, "We don't know what that full picture looks like for Spokane, and now we'd be adding additional trades. The state's not ready for all of this." City Councilmember Snyder said, "It's important to know all the potential impacts because so many people live and work near the Spokane Rail Viaduct, which goes through downtown." Snyder said he is also concerned about delays of emergency vehicles at street-level rail crossings. Washington's oil spill response preparations are focused on tankers in Puget Sound and pipelines, although Department of Ecology spokesperson Lisa Copeland told the paper there are spill response plans in place for inland waterways such as the Spokane River. Copeland said, nonetheless, the department has made a $650,000 budget request to Governor Inslee for additional rail oil spill preparation. Burlington Northern Santa Fe Railroad spokesperson Gus Melotis said the company has spent $125 million on track upgrades this year statewide, including $30 million on upgrades between the Idaho state line and Pasco. AmeriCorps volunteer Amanda Argona presented data from a Moscow Saturday Farmers Market need study at this afternoon's Moscow City Council Administrative Committee meeting. Argona said she got the largest sample size for the part of the survey targeting the Saturday Farmers Market customers.
Question one, how long did you stay at the market today? 36% stayed less than 30 minutes. So we have a lot of people going in there and getting out really quick. Do you live or work in this neighborhood? I don't know how you don't know if you live or work in the neighborhood, but we define the neighborhood as a half-mile radius because there are residences where the farmers market takes place. So a half-mile radius from the farmers market. Question three, did you come to the market for any reason besides shopping? The first available answer was A, no. And then from there, people who said yes their answers, as you can see on the right-hand side, many of them came for the atmosphere of the market, which I think is a telltale sign of music and being in the downtown area. As you can see, a lot of people answered with more than one response, and those are factored in. If you found a valuable item, what would you do with it? Mostly everyone said they would give it to staff. We had a very small percentage that actually said they'd keep it, which was surprising. But staff, vendor, and police were all identified as the main recipients of a valuable item. This is interesting. Several vendors at the farmers market are selling We Replace Tomatoes with similar produce, and where are you most likely to purchase those items? As you can see, favorite vendor was overwhelming with this question. And here we asked participants of the shopper survey what their occupation was. This shows you if they had two or more responses. Obviously, this does not capture all of the 206 shopper interviews that I used, because then we'd have a really large graph. But retired and student are up there. And then if you also look throughout that teacher, University of Idaho, I mean, many of these can factor in or be associated with the University of Idaho.
That was AmeriCorps volunteer Amanda Argona speaking to the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee today. Argona also said she surveyed 39 of the vendors at the market.
Question three was, are there other markets that are open today that could be a retail outlet for you? In the farmers market policy, we require that the grower be present, and so that limits a lot of other opportunities. But because family members, employees, that might not be other farmers market policies, some vendors are able to be in multiple markets for the day. So I just like you to consider that even though this shows some vendors who are at markets, other markets, again, this is only 39 vendors, and this is a combination of both walk-on and season vendors.
City Council Member Walter Steed asked Argona what will be done with the results. Argona said the data will be presented to the Farmers Market Commission when they meet later this week.
We could look at this and say, are there policies that need to be changed based on the vendor survey responses? Do we need to foster more community within the vendors themselves? You know, if we're just providing a place for vendors to come, but, you know, they're not really friendly with each other, what does that say maybe about what we're doing at the farmers market? You know, the demographics as far as shoppers go, who aren't we hitting? So we know we're hitting females, mm-hmm. They're white, they're aged 20 to 39 or 40 to 59, but, you know, how do we get the men there? And so I think it's going to be something that the commission looks at and says, this is really interesting. Let's go with this. Let's go further and take it somewhere else. And this is kind of a starting off point, I think, for that kind of information.
That was AmeriCorps volunteer Amanda Argona speaking to the Moscow City Council's Administrative Committee this afternoon. The Missoulian newspaper reports more than 60 groups and individuals have filed formal objections to draft forest management plans for the Idaho Panhandle National Forest and the Kootenai National Forest in Montana. The breakdown of formal objections was 22 for the Idaho Panhandle and 38 for the Kootenai. Panhandle Forest spokesperson Jason Kirchner said the forest planning process has changed from mostly timber production focus in 1987 to a process that focuses on ecosystem management now. The Kootenai National Forest is recommending 105,300 acres be designated as wilderness, while the Panhandle Forest is recommending 161,000 acres. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals has ruled a man building a single-family home in Pocatello on Fort Hall Indian Reservation land does not have to get construction permits from the Shoshone-Bannock tribes, reversing a decision by U.S. District Judge B. Lynn Windmill, the appeals court ruled the tribes don't have authority to regulate building on land within the reservation owned by non-tribal members. The court wrote Thursday they determined treaty language shows, quote, the tribes plainly lack authority to regulate Evans' construction of a single-family house on non-Indian fee land. Homeowner David Evans continued building his home after the tribes posted a stop work order on his property, and tribal officials told him he would be fined $500 per day if he ignored the order. Recently announced Democratic candidate for Idaho Governor A.J. Baluchoff of Boise has contributed to both Democratic and Republican campaigns in recent years. The list of Republicans Baluchoff supported included Mitt Romney, who he gave $5,000 during two presidential campaigns. Some of the more than a dozen Republican campaign recipients listed in an Associated Press article include former Governors Dirk Kempthorne and Phil Batt, former State Senator Hal Bunderson, and former Controller Keith Johnson. Some of Baluchoff's support for Democrats is more recent. For example, he gave $5,600 to the Idaho Democratic Party this year. However, he also gave campaign donations to former Superintendent of Public Instruction Marilyn Howard and former State Representative Ann Pasley Stewart. Baluchoff also gave $10,000 to the successful campaign to repeal Superintendent of Public Instruction Tom Luna's public school overhaul. Well, that's it for the KRFP Evening Report for tonight. Taking a look at the weather from the National Weather Service. There is a slight chance of flurries before 10 p.m., then a 40% chance of snow, mostly cloudy, low 15. Total nighttime snow accumulation less than half an inch. A 40% chance of snow tomorrow, cloudy, high 27, less than half an inch of new snow accumulation possible. On Tuesday night, 30% chance of snow, mainly towards morning, mostly cloudy, low 20, little or no snow accumulation expected, 30% chance of snow before 10 a.m. Wednesday, partly sunny, high 31, little or no snow accumulation expected, and highs will be getting up into the mid-30s by the weekend. Currently, mostly cloudy, 18 degrees in Moscow. Thanks for tuning in to the KRFP Evening Report. Coming up next is Eat the Airwaves, followed by Flashpoints, the daily investigative news magazine from Pacifica Radio. Eat the Airwaves, news and opinions from the West Side. And then live in the studios, Climate Justice Forum at 7:30. If you want to help KRFP keep newscasts like this on the air, plus the newscast you hear during Morning Mix, the recordings of local events, the public affairs shows, plus the music and arts programming you hear every day on Radio Free Moscow, be sure to become a member of Radio Free Moscow. Memberships are $35 a year, $20 for students and low income. You can mail your memberships to Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. That's Radio Free Moscow, 114 East 3rd Street, Moscow, Idaho, 83843. Or you could go to the Radio Free Moscow website to find out more ways to help Radio Free Moscow contribute to the community. I'm Lee Robertus. Have a good night. This is KRFP Moscow.